Imagine a text so insightful about human nature and power that Henry Kissinger reportedly kept it by his bedside. Silicon Valley executives study it for competitive strategy, and military academies worldwide analyze its psychological warfare tactics. Written over 1,500 years ago, Kautilya's Arthashastra offers precisely this level of enduring wisdom. Far from being merely India's answer to Machiavelli, this comprehensive treatise provides a sophisticated framework for governance that remains startlingly relevant today. What makes the Arthashastra extraordinary is its ruthless practicality combined with moral purpose. While advocating pragmatic approaches to statecraft, Kautilya never loses sight of the ultimate goal, a prosperous, stable kingdom where citizens can flourish. The text addresses everything from how to test ministers' loyalty to setting up intelligence networks, from economic policy during crises to diplomatic relations. Its precision reveals a mind that understood human nature with extraordinary clarity, which explains why, 15 centuries later, leaders still turn to this ancient manual for guidance in our complex modern world. The Arthashastra portrays the kingdom as a sophisticated organism where each component serves a vital function. At its core lies a compact kingdom with diverse landscapes connected by an elaborate road network, from 54-foot royal highways to narrow footpaths. Society followed the Varna system, with Kautilya taking a pragmatic approach. Though acknowledging nobility's natural capacity to rule, he preferred armies of trained kshatriyas or large forces of sudras and vaishyas over Brahmin troops, whom enemies could neutralize by prostrating before them. Cities organized professions into distinct quarters, with fire-using trades concentrated for safety. Village headmen maintained boundaries, while elders managed temple properties and resolved disputes. Communities balanced collective responsibility with autonomy through strategic fines. Women occupied a paradoxical position. Though primarily valued as begetters of sons, they controlled personal property, stradana, and had limited marriage rights that diminished in later Indian history. Despite these protections, women remained fundamentally dependent on male relatives. The source of the livelihood of men is wealth, states Kautilya, establishing economics as the foundation of state power. Without resources, strategies fail. A depleted treasury eats into the very vitality of citizens and country. Agriculture formed the backbone, with Kautilya noting, cultivable land is better than mines, because mines fill only the treasury, while agricultural production fills both the treasury and the storehouses, recognizing food security as fundamental. The economic system balanced state control with private enterprise. Land was primarily state-owned, though private ownership existed with transferable titles. The state reserved profitable mining and fishing areas while leasing difficult ones to private operators, maintained monopolies on alcohol and precious metals, and regulated commerce. This economic foundation supported an administration with 34 department heads. Officials held ranks with salaries ranging from 1,000 to 48,000 panas annually. Key positions included the royal chaplain, royal scribe, chancellor, and treasurer. The chief comptroller conducted audits before treasury transfers, with the accounting year closing with formal verification. A king who observes his duty of protecting his people justly and according to law will go to heaven, whereas one who does not protect them or inflicts unjust punishment will not. This reveals Kautilya's view that justice is essential to political stability, not merely moral virtue. The legal system integrated four bases: dharma, truth; evidence, witnesses; custom, traditions; and royal edicts, promulgated law. When conflicts arose, dharma generally prevailed, with written law based on dharma taking precedence over traditional texts. Judges worked in three-member benches with objectivity requirements. Court clerks recorded evidence without alterations, and at least three witnesses were typically required, each taking oaths tailored to their social position. Criminal investigations were scientific. Suspected poisonings were tested on birds using undigested food, while murder investigations analyzed motives, including family grievances and inheritance conflicts. Kautilya acknowledged officials' temptation. Just as it is impossible not to taste honey or poison at the tip of one's tongue, so it is impossible for one dealing with government funds not to taste the king's wealth. He identified 40 embezzlement methods and established investigation systems where informants received 1/6 of proven fraud amounts. Families of officials who died in service continued receiving salary, recognizing administration's human dimension. Miraculous results can be achieved by practicing the methods of subversion, states the Arthashastra, noting that a single assassin can achieve, with weapons, fire, or poison, more than a fully mobilized army. The intelligence network featured stationary agents disguised as monks or merchants and roving agents, including spies and assassins. Information required corroboration from 3 different sources, a verification system still recognized today. Secret agents, Satri, were recruited from state-raised orphans, while assassins, Tikshna, came from the bravest warriors. Female agents, often wandering nuns, could freely enter officials' homes to gather intelligence. Information moved through coded songs, signs, or hidden messages. Kings maintained spy networks across enemy, ally, and neutral territories, with agents operating under various covers. Domestically, agents identified discontented citizens while monitoring public spaces. For counterintelligence, kings employed disguised spies and posted seemingly disloyal officials at borders to attract enemy approaches, securing double agents' loyalty by holding their families hostage. Kautilya's international relations theory extends beyond neighbors are enemies, neighbors' neighbors are friends. His framework analyzes relationships between up to 12 states, each comprising 6 internal elements: king, ministers, fortified city, countryside, treasury, army. His foreign policy presents 2 paths: non-intervention to build confidence and consolidate gains, or active expansion of power. The skilled ruler binds other rulers by the chains of his intellect and plays with them as he pleases. Kautilya outlines 6 diplomatic methods: making conditional peace treaties, pursuing hostilities, from war to diplomatic pressure, staying quiet, strategic patience, preparing for war, seeking protection, and dual policy, peace with one neighbor while confronting another. His circle of states positions the conqueror at the hub, with allies forming the rim to squeeze enemies between them. Honor-based treaties are preferred over hostage exchanges. Kautilya identifies 3 power dimensions: intellectual, council, physical, treasury and army, and psychological, valor and morale. A conqueror must continuously assess these relative strengths to determine strategy. The Arthashastra remains relevant through its clear assessment of human nature and power dynamics. Nations still follow Kautilya's principles, knowingly or not, even while publicly rejecting them. Kautilya's pragmatic governance insights apply today. State welfare depends on economic prosperity. Excessive taxation destroys the tax base, and infrastructure development supports both commerce and security. His sophisticated understanding of intelligence operations and diplomatic strategies continues to influence modern international relations. Importantly, Kautilya recognized that effective rule requires not just power, but legitimacy derived from justice and public welfare. As we navigate contemporary challenges in governance, economics, diplomacy, and security, this ancient text offers valuable insights for building stable, prosperous societies. In our complex world, this enduring wisdom reminds us that while technologies and societies evolve, the fundamental challenges of governance, security, and human nature remain remarkably consistent across centuries.